Welcome to the So-and-So series, readings by early career poets.
The first two readers have books out on Black Ocean, and the last poet is Black Ocean. So let's get started. Our first author is Paige Ackerson Paige Ackerson Kiley. She is the author of a collection of poetry, In No One's Land, winner of the Sawtooth Prize, and published by Asata Press. She lives with her family in rural Vermont and works as a clerk. Paige.
So I'm just going to read a couple poems from In No One's Land, which is for sale up there for $10, if anybody feels so moved. And then a bunch of poems from a new manuscript called My Love is a Dead Arctic Explorer, which is basically, anyone read this book? It's a good book. It's about, it's the classic polar adventure. He gets carbon monoxide poisoning and nearly dies in the elements, but it's actually a first-person narrative and really beautiful and very brutal and very, very honest. So I tried to choose poems to read that worked on their own, but basically a script that relies a lot on epigraphs from this book. So I will read first poem in this book. Foreplay. You are sitting on the bed. The motel room is the color of breast milk. Reminders of the human capacity for forgiveness with their random tufts like a father roughing up his boy's hair. Son, you've made me proud. There are times when an absence of pride means a lion is eating his cub. The lioness under some reeds growling like an unwound basket. Unthreading stalks like tight stitches in all the wounds you don't mean to make, then abandon, embarrassed. Here is a man darning. Here is a woman spitting into a sink. Here is all of Berlin in the creosote of the coughing, sitting primly at the windowsill, looking out. You lean back on the bed, which is like curling into a giant yawn, pretty ambivalent shrug. Any minute now, someone will push his way through the door and announce something. Dinner is served. The surgery, answer a few questions. Is no, I've had enough. From the bow of my boat, I daydream your pants. The longing is so great, I might imagine slipping into them, not just a hand, but both legs. I might take a dog around the deck, so great is my desire to you, but to dwell righteously in your femur, which is hot like a fever, but in the end is not a fever. Jesus came and he kissed the eyes of a blind woman. Jesus opened his robe and the ocean poured forth. Look closely at all of the fish we have to eat, their scales upon which the keys of our teeth may finally sing. Their bones a most staunch. Put your hands over your ears and become as small as you possibly can. Come on, you can fit into that shoebox with the balled up tissue paper lying next to you smelling like Cambodian food. And Jesus came with food to Cambodia, and elsewhere he came with plates of pickerel and snapper and cod and jellyfish. The world is limp and furthermore dead, and I am so hungry I will not eat a single thing. As you are everything to me, you are at this in thing. Driven all this way, the dust behind the car quiring up in brief staccato, the clip swift enough so that every home appeared as a starched white sheet tucked around a woman's body, the breath a breezeway leading to the garage. I was lulled, cowish, by seemingly limitless cud. Driven all this way to the laundry in the laundry room, I deconstruct the unaroused sea towel by towel. There will be no comfort at the beach today. Driven all this way through the declarative traffic lights, I just want you to stop right now, past the great limitations of love, plainly preschool billboard, early release. Driven with care to the stocked refrigerator, the journey from death down the throat in one quick swallow that the tilapia sacrifice might save us. Driven to choke back, to unquestion, driven shakily to contextualize the enemy in every imaginable sphere, Driven to make the best out of it, pushed in front of the door to prevent quick entry. I read your book, and suddenly I could die anywhere. Waiting for his love to take, I held him clumsily. His face was without form, and darkness moved upon it. I was told you must keep him still for 6 days. I needed to be sure he did not try to leave, so I asked, let there be light, and the sanatorium, and it was a soft yellow light, and good to his features. He was thirsty on the second day, so I said, let there be water apart from the earth, and a glass of water appeared at his bedside, and it was good clean water, and he drank it as though its existence were not a miracle. He drank it like he was impartial to dying a general death. He drank it, and it was good, good he didn't know I was already dreaming of my solitary reinvention. On day 3, he became hungry and agitated, so I begged, let there be grasses bearing seed and also some fruit from a tree as sensuous as a woman he imagines when he enters me, and thus a peach became visible in my hand, and I fed him, and all in all, it was a pretty good show. On the day, the beasts were called, creeping things that frightened me, fowl and cattle beneath the window of the sanatorium, grazing passively, grazing on really good grass. Day 5, he coughed like a badger, clawing a warren where I hid, hedging my bets, living in my fur as I was granted control over all the beasts, and thus fashioned myself something warm and attractive from the rest. He called out some names on the 6th morning. He said Barstool and Dispatch and Megawatt and Thermopolis, and all of these things became as he called them, and it was good. It was good to have a list. Later that evening, after he described fortitude and unctuous, he said a word I had not heard before, but it made my teeth ache and a slow itch spread down my forearm, and I thought I felt a very one of those fuzzy pastel sweaters with a plunging neckline standing close to me, her breath soft against my neck, and I wanted to kiss someone really bad, but also to remain still forever, so that this feeling might be known to anyone who happened upon me. He said helper, and he made a motion with his hands, like he was breaking an egg into a hot frying pan. Although I knew not of dirty laundry at the time, I understood he was naming me, and it was good. It was good to know I was not, for example, a sliver of metal used to mend holes in cloth. It was good to place my head in my very own hands, which were not as I had imagined them, hatch battened downers, pious wincing shovels, but as he named them, your hands. And with this knowledge, I rest sweetly. It's funny to read that poem because I'm actually an atheist, and I think that that makes me sound a little something else. Global warming. Maybe you are working. I decided to write as like the home of like John Elder and all these people who are getting attention and lots of dollars all of the time to write environmental literature, which is great and excellent, and I don't begrudge them that at all. But I decided I would try to sort of like ride on their coattails, and so far it has totally not worked out to my advantage at all. And so this was my one like sort of pathetic attempt that appeared in like the Alternative Weekly in Burlington, a death threat about. it's called Global Warming. Maybe you are working in a convenience store making change for the newspaper when it happens. You are suddenly in love. Your arm extends to receive the cash as though the customer were helping you out of the bath. The bills like towels he might wrap snug around your noise inside of you, and every noise inside of you returns the one long noise of your love. Let's say it sounds like a door closing over and over. The customers hear the door closing and become afraid. Those with watches check their watches. You kiss the insides of their wrists. Those wearing high heels bend over to make sure their heels haven't broken. You remove the shoe. You bathe the foot. And those with nothing grab and begin to study the ingredients list, which is short. Peanuts, salt. Then they return the peanuts to the rack and continue to have nothing because there is no pretending. Don't be so afraid. Look, you never had anything before, but now, suddenly, slam, it is love, unstoppable, sealing you in. The criminals searching for an easy target do not have a bag store. So when your drunk boyfriend picks you up late and spits in your face and calls you a whore, or your boss tells you he is cutting your hours so you sleep with him because there is not a bag large enough in which to stuff the reasons not to, it will be all right. The doors will close, over and over. There isn't really anything else they can do. They are frighteningly automatic after all. They keep the heat in. There is an energy crisis the world over. The day the news rolled in that half of the world's population had perished via an anticipated but still shocking chemical explosion, even the country music station recanted on its promise, all country, all the time. Death on a large scale always takes precedence and allows one to act swiftly and without guilt. I think of his torso hewn to my grief so that afterward it was easier to be around the happy stuff everyone seemed to remember. It was all very confusing. As the radio put it, complete mayhem. I thought about going to the school early to pick up my daughter, but decided against it. All those children parroting sorrow, what did they know? Sure, a few of them had been punched, slapped, spit upon, held down, and raked over. So you won't go far, you won't be going anywhere at all. I love my daughter, her pale, vesperal hair, a minor song of my continuance. Unlike the country music station, the day the news rolled in that half of the world's population had perished, I did my chores as usual, putting the dirty clothes into the washer and removing the clean ones from the dryer, as if it was as though I knew I was not going anywhere until an anticipated but still shocking chemical explosion allowed me to perish from my daughter, my swift, guiltless death, an event that would bring context to her sorrow and allow her to remember, unbidden, the happy stuff, so that she might be spared the compulsion to lay her body down, however dutifully, in defiance of being studied. I thought of the way the singers preferred created a chest pulse, commonly known as the cry break in country music, and how I had, while doing the laundry or tending that which required my tenderness, until that moment, been listening for it. And this last one is from a long series on gambling in the classic Polar Adventure. So I'm just going to read a section of that. I fold under the ennui, the mute spiritus languishing in group speak. I fold the muttered hymns into loops behind the pop songs that we are advised to feel. I fold across the shuddering plains of my nation, disabused of its raising. I fold the girl into a woman and build into a big lot, my shitty car parked interminably. I fold the quilts, their warmth unabiding, this strict decision for a stalwart cool. I fold the animals into my mouth, for if they are to rest, they must rest entirely. I fold, exhausted, the white men into abandoned mills, the folds of cloth they want, and turning away. I fold, terribly weak, into thinking the traffic sounds like the dull monogamy of the ocean, where I was happy once. I fold into the delusion of similarity, that by folding I can replicate a variety of worship, that God is within us, and with each lover I fold over the same lover, pleated and rutched and gathered at his sides, is him.
Thank you, Paige. Our second poet is Zachary Schoenberg. Where is Jeremiah? Right here. Everyone say thank you to Jeremiah. He has been a lot of help to Ropadope Press as of late and deserves a shout out.
Shout back.
Thanks. Yes.
Our second poet is Zachary Schoenberg. He is the author of a book of poems, The Mansuit, on Black Ocean. From last year, the co-editor of an online poetry magazine, Octopus, and the co-editor of a small poetry press, Octopus Books. Poems from his new manuscript, Scary No Scary, are in Denver Quarterly and Born, among others. His collaborations with Emily Kendall Fry, who is in the room, are in Diode Sir and Pilot. His translation of the Russian poet Andrei Sentsenkov, that's all I got, are forthcoming in Circumference and Jubilat. Oh, wait, and Mantis? I'm a little confused. He wrote them. He is a PhD student at the University of Nebraska, but lives in Portland, Oregon. Zachary Schoenberg.
Thanks, Chris, for that very okay introduction. Very forgettable. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to read a couple of poems, just two poems from The Mansuit, which I don't, I haven't read these poems very often. They're about the ninth and twelfth best palms in the book. but if you like these, there are like 8 better palms if you want to buy it.
This is only like about the 11th best reading series. Yeah. You're solid, man.
Okay. This one's called The Constellation Room. I once lost my coat and a girl named Marlene at the planetarium. I remember checking my room called the Constellation Room. In it, you can look at thousands of constellations that have yet to be named. I gave names to many of the constellations, and I took notes in my notebook. One I called the Pyramids. One I called the Owl, because it looked like an owl. Bright stars for eyes, perched in a tree, preparing to swoop down at a mouse. One I called the Pack of Cigarettes. One cigarette looked as if it was out and lit, the brightest star its tip. One I called the chicken, and one the birdseed cluster. One of my favorites I called the African Safari. It had an elephant and a water buffalo. There was an anaconda having sex despite being eaten alive. There was a hippo eating a young teenage boy tourist. The boy tourist had a pair of binoculars around his neck, khaki shorts, and a canteen. Another constellation I called Marlene, after the girl I lost. She was mostly naked, except for my lost coat, which was draped over her hips to keep her warm, nipples of hers burning the night. A friend of mine, Tony, said that good poetry began in delight and ends in nipples. So true. This one's called The Truth About Canada. Canada is actually an ocean, a very toxic one at that. Most people are unaware of this fact. You have to take a boat across it, and you have to paddle quickly because you surely won't want to meet the dangerous creatures that live in that ocean. Be sure none of the water gets on your skin. On my last trip to Canada, I met a man named Carlos floating on a life raft. It was half inflated, and he was half dead with a full beard. He was frightened after I nursed him back to consciousness. I offered him a seat in my boat, and he took aim all of his paddling. On a few occasions, I attempted to talk with him about how he ended up in his half-inflated raft. He would get a little angry and bounce the questions back to me. When he didn't bounce the questions back, he would comment on the weight of the Canadian sky, how it weighed exactly 1 gigaton. The conversation went on like that Then he began to disappear into the scenery, become my own perspective, a little bit of the boat, the sky so heavy on the ocean, and the green ocean. Funny enough, I missed him after that. I felt like I knew him so well. When he spoke, he spoke the truth. I'm going to read some new poems. This is actually a series. There's 80 poems. They're just a few poems. This is actually, it looks like a lot, but this is thick paper, and like half of them are blank. there's like 2 poems. I'm going to read these 2 poems. It's called The Pond. It's a longer poem, and I wrote it after Emily actually was reading basically exclusively Emily poems, so they kind of sound like hers, but I just copied off of her mostly. So it's called The Pond. A manuscript that I have called Scary No Scary. I was born in a boat with 1 paddle. The sky is full of holes from which fog comes out. The swans are so still, I think they are part of my eyeballs. I rub my eyeballs with my fists. I have 2 eyeballs. I have 2 fists. I make a list of everything I have on my head all out. I have a complete skeletal system with skin all over it. Little blind thing, it's what you see when you look at me. A thing in the pond at night looks a little like a face. And has a gravitational pull. I am 9 months old in a boat, tied to a year in a crib, tree limbs bendy in the window, Now I am a year and 3 months in an open field when I learn. If there is a shadow of a tree and no trees around, I am the tree. I invented a language that isn't little bird calls. I can fit a number of things in my pants. It tells you what time it is. I invented a love machine. It tells you it loves you. I invented the vibrating bed and how it makes you feel. I invented the way leaves hide a pond. Man, my whole life I imagine a man eating jaguar hungry on the horizon. I am a boy who lives in the woods. I fall in love with trees mostly. When I touch them, they turn to wood. When I touch you, you turn into a pond. I walk into a pond like I love it. I like that line. That's so good. I am sleeping on a chair with very long legs in the middle of a pond. I don't have a name. You don't know what to call me. You try Hank, but I'm sleeping, so I can't hear you. Then you start to sleep. Now everyone is sleeping at the same time. You don't have a name. I ride a horse out of a town and into the pond. We are still for a while, the horse and I. The swans swim in one big circle around us. I have a habit of leaving a place I don't know how to get back to. I have a habit of leaving the place. Don't hate me for what I have become. I'm sorry I missed your birthday party, I say, but I say it like a horse. My legs fit perfectly in my pants. My leg bones fit so perfectly in my legs. My friends say I'm all alone. Okay, I got just a couple more. It is difficult to tell what will happen next. Maybe we'll hold hands and walk down to the pond. Maybe a bat will fly into the pond and swim around like it's having fun. But then it'll struggle and start to die. But it gets kind of excited. I like that. Everybody's kind of excited. Like, oh, this bat's going to have fun. The bat dies, man. We'll watch it start to die. We'll agree that we understand how the bat feels. We'll say, I know the feeling, but we won't know the feeling. The feeling we'll know is more like being on a chair with real day. You are hovering above the wrong funeral. Think of a pond with bats in it. This is some kind of bravery. Okay, two more. If I could invent a town, I'd invent a town on a pond with boats scattered everywhere in a dark fog. When you come to town, I'll be sleeping in one of the boats, but you'll find me right away. It'll be quiet, past the outskirts of town, past the last empty boat. I'll show you the cave where all the bats come from. You'll show me that place between your knees where my hand goes. At the edge of the pond, someone who looks like hands with someone who looks like you. I begin to wonder who I am because I don't look like me. Okay. Thank you.
Our last reader is Jonica Stuckey. He is the founder and managing editor of Black Ocean and publishes the magazine Handsome. When's the second issue due?
December.
I should probably not ask that. Second issue coming out.
We're still accepting submissions.
Momentarily.
And Black Ocean is in the middle of their open reading period, which ends June 30th, and there's no reading.
So. Send away. Fill their slush till it overflows. Since receiving his BFA from Emerson and an MFA in poetry from Vermont College in 2003, he remains rooted in Boston, spending his life traveling, writing in Hotel Motel, North American Review, Readivider, and Volt. Jonica.
This is cool. It's like a press conference.
It's very small.
It's a press conference for ants. So I'm going to read about knives, love, and death, in that order, because knives love death. Every thank you is a hurricane of knives. Standing with my tongue in my hand, I practice gratitude with every little breath. I breathe carcinogens and pathogens surrounded by bodies I mistake for motionless. Within me is a morgue. And inside that morgue stands me, talking. I say things to the dead I can't say to the living. Absurd and ecstatic phrases I repeat like, he's going to dislike me now, most likely. And I corpse the way it makes sense to me, so we laugh and laugh laughter like I never laugh out loud until our jaws drop off. I sew them shut. Knuckle cracking of a clock. We stare at each other all night. Watch the bricks not tumble in the still cold wind. My hands are delicate. I feel like a giant. There is so much love inside me. I practice gratitude with every little breath. I practice gratitude. I wish for massive joy. That's probably the only preface you need to know is that I have spent the last 7 years working in the funeral business. Which doesn't, and my love for knives precedes that. But that's not the reason I got into the funeral business, I should ask. Look at your reflection in the knife's horizon. Bring it closer and closer, so only your eyes remain now. Slowly twist the edge away from your disappearing face until just the knife continues. Point the blade towards heaven. 6 ways to love a knife. 1, the swishing sound, and that is enough. 2, this rose bursting delicately out, then rising. 3, everyone is a half-opened blush over endless suburbs, inside the wall a window, a branch and blossom. 5, walking along the edge of a pool and slipping in. 6, the gruesomeness of hell which no one can take me from. For the ritual ceremonies, K is kill. Careful when heard with the ear, the cold K at the end of shark, the crazy K, the corrupt K, the KKKKKKK, K the disorder sprouting from the jagged edge in a knife, this dangerous seed is always silent and implied. N is pregnant with null and nothing and no. N negating the K from the I. I is for I as in me, I is the you in every knife. I is the enabler. The essential vowel awakening the rest to cut, narrow I, starving and thin, which never has its fill. F is the act. F is what happens, the f of a knife fulfilling its goal. When gathered comes V, and V is the most dangerous of all, V is the eye in a hurricane of knives. V opens wide to swallow us whole. E is for emptiness. At the end of awake, E is for everything that follows. Know her disappearance by the knife left upon your pillow's case, a corpse with its hand stuck in a beehive, a glacier of blood. You will count the nights apart on your remaining fingers. In the wet cave of your loneliness, you will spoon the knife against your naked frame. You will dream of the knife standing next to and the knife will become her in a phosphorescent dress, and she will become the moon in the black sky, and the moon will leave you. This poem is the poem that is on the broadside up there. I should have told you after I read the poem. The poem that's on the broadside. Jennifer Blood. Beneath the olive tree, your tongue, interrogating blade. Let me start over. Jennifer Blood. Beneath the olive tree, your tongue, interrogating blade, slips across my skin. In the grass, my hieroglyphic fucking when I forget how to say I love you. The crop of stones beside us moves closer, down. The only word left is your name, an ocean of black magic between us. We spend the night with your finger in my mouth, my favorite pen in your fall, rise up burning. What is my decision to die? Burn all my books thinking of the magnets in your hands, across the frozen water I ghost. Oh, I should say, that last poem and the next few poems are from Paige's kids, who are 6 and 8 now?
7 and 8.
But they were like 5 and 7 when they came
five
up.
And six, yeah.
5 and 6. They made up all these songs on Christmas Eve, and the songs had the most amazing titles. So I said, they're too young to care if I steal them from my own poetry. Titles, and I took all 10 of them, and I did a series of them. And I had to write the poems, and I used the titles in the same order they came up with. Anyway, so that last one, What Is My Decision to Die, was one of their songs. And and the next few are also from that series. And some of the best titles I'm not even reading tonight, but anyway, you see why I had to write poems based on them. The Opposite of Dreams. Every lover is a home, and what is architecture? A place which is nothing and indistinguishable from all the other nothing until we place it by them. The architecture of my past is slipping away. I walk from room to empty room and fill each one with miscellany, nights and teardrops piling in the corners of every mouth I've kissed. Memories are the opposite of dreams, which are placeless. Your hands are a bungalow by the lake. Child is a vulture, a black speck in the white sky. All these things we don't have circle our house at night. My nightmares of our burning bedroom, the things I would save. Am I reading loud enough for you guys? Am I reading loud enough? Who's that scary monster that stole the snow? She once was a knife in his desperate knuckles, pursuing desire at the center of a magnet. They had until spring, which was tomorrow, to find the beauty they feared most. Beneath them, angels in the countless fathoms beat their flippers, tails and tentacles flailing. Steps stole the snow. There was a monster, but I never saw him. My bruised body saw you off into nothing. The moment you arrived, you were already leaving. After you left, I found an Everyone thinks I'm ancient, but I'm only 7. And the weird tie-in also is obviously I took the title from Paige's kid. This poem takes place in a little boat, and one of like all the poems you could have read in your which takes place in a boat. I didn't plan that. But actually, I just publish other people's poetry so I can steal their ideas and put them in my poetry. It's pretty cool. It works out pretty well. In the 100 years it takes to cross the ocean between us, I read every book in my body being picked up. All my maps are useless and invisible. Every now and then, a tentacle reaches up from the darkness and points to the places you are not. In my dreams, I remember everything about you. But when I awake, there is only your hair in my fists and the journey ahead. I imagine when my small boat finally arrives in your place will say that I am too late. You are long gone. And when I tell him it's been 100 years, he will laugh and say it's only been 7 days, and his mouth will grow wide, and he will swallow me whole. It's in a bottle back there, and I just came back from Romania a few weeks ago, and we brought this Romanian moonshine with us, and it's plum brandy, and the guy who I got it from didn't speak any English, so I'm just taking his word for it, but he builds these little wooden ladders inside the bottles, like a ship in a bottle. Anyway, it's back there. It's very scotch or a whiskey fan. You'll probably be able to tolerate it on ice. If you don't drink something of that caliber straight, then you should probably just leave it alone. But Death Stain. Actually, I'm going to skip this one. Too good. It's too good. I got to put it away. It's got to. You guys aren't ready for that one. I just did you guys a big favor. Where insect shadows war. Without apology, vibrate. Awake the sleeping heat. In the dark, there is only darkness and the things to. Your naked body, arched and full of wounds. The black sky with veins of blacker trees running through it. Scissors flocked and cooing along the bark. Everywhere we don't look within this enormous waiting room, children play with matches, planes about to crash. In the bed of this dumb animal skull, my butcher's eye hums with the one breath I've left. There is no I in funeral. The coffin a palindrome, frail tub of water you could reach into, make a fist and drain, the starlight in my blood. There is no I in funeral. I, solitary glyph. I, a suture stretched across the page. I, the inevitable blessing of death. In death, I blossom, send bouquets. Celebrate death like you would life. Buy yourself new shoes. Go out to dinner. Take. In the end, there is no end. Just the first day of the rest of your life. A flock of wax wings in the rowan tree is evidence of a successful crossing. According to tradition, it is best to return in the form of a bird. Got a few more left. Obviously, we're on the trip. Zach's book is there. It's $10. He is too modest to tell you this, but just recently got chosen by the New York Public Library as one of the top 25 books of 2007, which is pretty cool because then I did some research. I was like, so how many books were published in 2007? So that must feel pretty good.
And that's how many books of poetry?
Right, right. 290,000 books of poetry were published in 2007. No, there were only, out of the 25 books, of course, only three of them were poetry. One was by Margaret Atwood, one was by Robert Haas, and one was by Zachary Schomburg. Pretty cool. Yeah. Critique each other's work and whatever. And Paige is the editor of Handsome, which is up there too, which I publish, but I don't edit, because she's smarter than I am. A matchbox with beetle wings inside.
Her kids are smarter.
Her kids are smarter than I am. I'm just going to skip this poem because... No, it's good. It's good. I'm going to skip that one because the other thing I wanted to say was that Zach... This will take up the time of the poem. Zach is also reading tomorrow night at Brookline Booksmith with one of our other authors who is on tour, Ron Klasnick, who's patiently sitting over here without having... but he and Zach are reading at Brookline Booksmith tomorrow, and I encourage you to come out to that because I'm sure Zach will read different poems, right?
No pressure.
No pressure.
From the first day.
And you heard about he's like in Portland and Nebraska and stuff, and Ron lives in Mexico, so it's a good opportunity to see the other poem. That is a good one. So now I'm down to two. So it was good. It was like that I went off stage and now this is my encore. The window in the shoebox. I met an undertaker at the beach today who told me that every knife is a window. He was right. When I went home, I used one to look into a tomato. Then I looked through one into the honeycomb I pulled from a jar. I grabbed another window from the rack and looked into the gentle star bomb of a mouse that tried to scurry beneath the stove. I began rummaging through the house, collecting all my windows from the drawers under the bed and the windows in the closet. I found delicate storefronts showing me all the things I can't afford. I found a window I once ordered from a catalog that sparkles like cathedral glass, promising the kiss of God. I found a window in an old shoebox I thought I had lost and almost cried. When I was done, I lay all the windows I found in a pile on the kitchen table and clapped my hands as I looked into each other, looking into each other, looking into each other. And when my clapping hands grew tired, I continued to watch, whistling now and then as the evening wind blew through the windows, then through me. The sun began to sink through the blinds until the accident of night reduced us. The night grew full, then less than nothing. I began to tremble, flickering silently as blood. I finally picked up the largest window and, climbing through it, breaking and entering back into the beach where the undertaker sits at a dinner table with my entire family. My mother and grandmother are there, and my father waits at the head, wearing a necklace of heart attacks. Seeing me, my wife waves by the ocean, standing next to an empty chair. Her smile is an origin detonating on the slate horizon. Destroy song. Our children's tears when I am blown into their eyes. Thank you.
Another hand for all of our readers, please. Thanks again for coming. Thanks again for all the work that Rope a Dope Press does with the reading series. Please check out the is Chad reading? Is Chad reading tomorrow?
Chad's reading and someone else too, who I don't
know. Right. So Chad Reynolds, a Rope a Dope author, is reading tomorrow with Ron and Zach and said forth unknown author. Huh? Carl. That is right, yeah. But we don't know Carl. Okay. With Carl. sweet. That'll be. So check out Chad's chapbook
sold
as well.
Out. Huh? Sold out.
Oh, it's sold out. I said check it out. Did I say buy it?
No.
I think I said check it out.
From the library.
And then rue the fact that you missed out on buying it. And feel bad about yourself about that. July reading. You should come to it next time. I'll be here. The 26th. July 26th.
You will be here?
I'll be here.
Thank God.
It's the 27th reading on the 26th.
It's the 27th reading on the 26th. Excellent. There's probably some numerology there. Thanks again. Appreciate you coming. Are there still open studios now? Can people go into people's things? Break. Later, Hosens.